and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance. I'm Matt Anthony.
And I'm Eric Arneson. And tonight, we are interviewing Soror Tzadkiel, who created the Rota Tarot. Rota Tarot. Say hi, Soror Tzadkiel.
Greetings!
So, your tarot deck is pretty interesting. Like, it's very colorful. It possibly, amongst all the tarot decks I've ever seen, it is the most colorful. Like, so I suppose the first question I have for you is, like, did you do that on purpose?
Absolutely. So, I have most of my experience in, as far as esoteric work goes, in the builders of the Adytum tradition. And before that, I had done some work in the Golden Dawn tradition as well. But I did several years of courses with courses from the BOTA that were written by the late Paul Foster Case, a genius and a world-renowned tarot scholar and Kabbalist. And the colors that I utilize in Rota Tarot, as well as the majority of the symbols, are inspired by his deck. Mm-hmm. And his deck basically was said to be received from the Comte de Saint-Germain in a series of channelings, or a lot of the deeper esoteric meanings.
Wait.
Of the deck.
So the Paul Foster Case deck was channeled from Saint-Germain.
Many of the teachings, indeed, for sure. It's definitely rooted. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so there's actually kind of a funny story about it, about how the Comte de Saint-Germain and Paul Foster Case kind of came in contact with one another. But basically, Case was like the best that they had. Not like, oh, you're amazing and you have this divine mission, but you're actually the best we got, so we got to give this to someone. You fit the bill. And he started the Builders of the Adytum School and wrote about 15 years worth of courses based on tarot, alchemy, Tree of Life, Cube of Space, whatnot. But the colors I utilize are from his system. So yes, they were intentional. As far as the minor cards, I haven't done, I heard there's a course that comes later in the BOTA curriculum that deals with coloring the minor keys, but I have no idea how they're colored. So I just kind of use the elemental colors, you know, intuitively. That's pretty straightforward with the minor keys, but the major keys are from Case's system. But a lot of the color signatures, I mean, they really have a lot of deep connections with one another between the different keys. For example, if you lay out the zodiacal cards in the major arcana in a circle, they make a complete color wheel. It's like we have Aries, and that's red, is that... Taurus is red, orange, etc., so on and so forth.
And that's from the BOTA? Okay.
Oh. That's from the BOTA.
All right, cool. That's neat. Okay, I just realized that I'm super thirsty.
So all right.
I'm going to open this beer.
Do it.
It's small. it's a gigantic oyster mushroom saison. It's in a crowler. I think it's 32 ounces. I'm not sure. But it's gigantic.
Love crowlers. Ah.
Oh, I think I just got beer on my computer. Damn, this thing is huge. And a little messy. Damn it. Okay, cool. Soror Tzadkiel, how long have you been doing the BOTA stuff? Like, when did you get started?
I started doing the BOTA studies in 2013. 2013, late summer of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I started studying Golden Dawn material in 2007.
Okay. And did you do the Golden Dawn stuff solo?
So I did independent Golden Dawn studies from around the time I started going to University of Memphis until I moved to Western North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And in that area, I found a group doing that work and did some work over there. And then I have a lot of friends that I've made over the years in different Golden Dawn groups. The bulk of my work... Oh, sorry, go.
Oh, no. You could talk too. We could both talk at the same time.
But yeah, I did like Lesser Banishing Rituals of the Pentagram for years before I ever came into contact with a group that was actually, you know, doing that as part of a curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I kind of tapped into the Golden Dawn system pretty early when I was 18.
Oh. So. Did you work from the self-initiation into the Golden Dawn book from Chicken Tabitha Cicero?
So I have not actually done that whole working. I have not done that, but I did make some of the implements using their instructions.
Nice.
So
I never did that. I mean, I actually worked through Donald Michael Craig's Modern Magic, which I think kind of has the same instructions. It's been a very long time. I'm trying to remember exactly what it tells you to do, but I might actually tell you to buy the Cicero's Big Green Book and use their instructions. But when it came time to make magical implements, I just sort of did it my own way. I'm not sure. I mean, nothing killed me. I never got possessed by demons or, Oregon's on fire now, but I don't think that's related.
Yeah. You know, in one of I don't know if you have read Pat Zalewski's commentaries on the Golden Dawn rituals. They're amazing, by the way. He does them for each of the degrees.
I don't know if I've read those. I have a Zalewski book that I just finished. I can't remember the title of it. I'm sure it's right over my shoulder in that bookcase directly behind me.
Yeah.
I don't read as much Golden Dawn stuff as I used to now, but.
Gotcha. Yeah. He did actually mention in one of the commentaries, I believe it was on the Zealoter, mm-hmm. For the Zealoter grade, that the Nemesis actually, like the tail of the Nemesis goes over the chakras in the back of the spine to prevent demons from possessing you in the ritual.
Really?
So it's just kind of funny that he said, I was never possessed by anything. Well, make sure you make your Nemesis.
I never made a Nemesis, but it's always it's always been on my list of things. Like every once in a while, I'll come across a pattern online. I really like to sew. And every once in a while, I'll come across a pattern online and I will be like, hey, I should make a Nemesis. But then finding like the right stripey materials and stuff. When I first got my sewing machine, the one that I have, I guess it's my first sewing machine. When I first got my sewing machine, I did make myself a hat. I'm going to go get it.
Do it.
You guys just discuss things amongst yourselves.
Okay. Have you, what's your connection with the esoteric work?
I came in through Masonry, but I always had an attraction to Golden Dawn as well. And I bought the Green Book and I started doing the preparatory work, the 3 months of meditations leading up to it. Got a week from doing the first grade and had a really freaky experience that scared me away from it for but I'm still super interested in Golden Dawn, but I wanted, instead of doing it self-initiation, I wanted to find a group and I just haven't found a group.
Fair enough, man. I had some pretty spooky synchronicities myself, you know, over the years that are pretty, frightening. So I don't blame you. I love masonry, though. I am a master mason in comasonic currents, and I think it's like a really beautiful, pure current.
Right on, yeah. Oh, look at Eric's hat.
Yeah, you can see this fabric. It's got astrological symbols on it. Right. I accidentally. Cool. It's hard to make hats, like to make things of the proper size. So it's really big, but it's not big enough to fit over my headphones. So, you know, but it's a hat. Oh,
it is.
It's got a nice, like I put a hat band on the inside of it and stuff, and it's all, I mean, the construction is wonderful, but it needs to belong to somebody with slightly less dignity and a slightly larger head than mine. maybe I could sell it on eBay.
You probably could.
Yeah. I'll wait until I get famous. So Matt, what are you drinking?
A really foamy beer.
What's it called?
Oh, stop foaming.
Wow. So tell us about your smoke situation. What's it like up there? How bad is it?
In Vancouver, Washington?
Yeah.
It's smoky. It's bad, dude. Like, I walked outside yesterday morning and there was ash everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. I took a step and, like, poofs of ash were up and, like, it smelled like a campfire outside.
Yeah.
It's like, this is bad news, dude.
It's gnarly. I don't think that the part of the country that isn't on fire realizes how crappy it is right now.
Like, it's bad.
Idiot kids with fireworks started a fire in the Columbia Gorge.
I know. It's like, oh my God, dude. Mm-hmm. The place that is like burning to the ground right now is one of the most beloved hiking spots mm-hmm. in this area.
Yeah, there are a lot of really sad and upset people. Yeah, so I mean, I've lived in Oregon my whole life, and when I was in Southern Oregon, every year we'd have a fire season where it'd get kind of smoky. Some years it was this bad, but not for very long. But this is the worst I've ever seen it in Portland. In fact, I don't know. I feel like we had a forest fire year not too long ago, but that it wasn't super bad. But this is just really gross. I can't even tell. Can you guys hear my cat?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exploding beers and cats and...
Well, I'm not drinking a beer this evening, but I'm drinking Townsend's kombucha. It's turmeric and ginger because of the smoke is kind of making my immune system a little gnarly.
Okay, I'm back. This feels like the most chaotic.
It does. It's
like... Full moon in Pisces.
You know, my lunar return is in Pisces, and long, long ago, I can't remember who I was talking to, but long, long ago when I was first doing the Golden Dawn stuff and I was first like doing like tarot meditations and that sort of thing, every once in a while I'd have these like really freaky occurrences with a tarot deck. I remember one of them in particular where I saw the card that I was going to draw before I drew it. I was doing one card a day and like doing a meditation on it. And I saw the card that I was going to draw before I drew it. And it was the Ten of Swords, which is a freaky card to begin with. You know, that's the extra stabby card. And and I drew it and I was like, fuck, it was messed up. So I was talking to somebody in my study group about it. And they were like, well, where's the moon in your chart? I'm like, I don't know. I don't go for that astrology crap. But so I figured it out and I looked and it's like 14 degrees in Pisces. So it turns out that all of these, I'd been keeping track of the position or the, you know, the location of the moon in my magical journal. And all of the places where I was having these weird occurrences was during my lunar return every month. And that's freaky. Right?
Yeah.
So if it's a full moon in Pisces, then it might be my lunar return. Does anybody know? I mean, you guys obviously don't know exactly where my lunar return is. I'll look right now.
Interesting. The moon card is attributed to Pisces in the tarot.
Oh, cool. Tell us a little bit about
astrologer. An astrologer friend I have in Canada named Rab. He's an astro whiz and a very advanced practitioner of many arts, Western mysteries, and also Vajrayana Buddhism. He called Pisces the dustbin of the zodiac.
The dustbin of the zodiac? What does that mean?
It's like the last sign of the zodiacal year, and it like collects all of the karmic shit from all the other signs.
Oh, so it's the leftover bits. It's like...
Kind of. And it rules the feet, and the feet are, like, the most neglected part of bodies, I think. You know? We are, like, on our feet all the time.
Yeah.
We, like, walk on them, and, like, they just don't get quite as much attention just in the collective, I think.
Your feet are probably infinitely more likely to accidentally encounter feces than any other part of your body.
Yeah, and like they carry all the weight, you know. So I think that that's pretty symbolic. Also, the moon is like, after having done years and years worth of meditations with the tarot and the BOTA system, and also you know, you really get inside the cards with creative visualization and like affirmation work and like digging into all the symbols and working with various like Kabbalistic meditations and whatnot with the keywords. The moon is spooky, man.
Yeah.
Like, I had a lot of really intense, brutal shadow work that I went through when working with the moon. I got like brutally sick, had like conflicts with people, like intense shadowy stuff. And that's pretty common from correspondences I've had with other people.
So then the BOTA work with the major arcana, it involves like pretty specific work. Well, I guess like path working. You do path working.
Huh. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's path working for sure. Yeah. The courses.
Keep going.
It would basically just be, you know, daily meditations, journaling, creative visualization, poking and prodding in your meditations. You know, you do some breath work and like get into a trance state. Bam.
Do you see it?
And
I do.
Cool. That's the moon.
And but you know, not all is lost in the moon card. You have all those yodes raining down.
Like, yeah.
The divine hands from heaven. You know, there's hope.
Plus
you have to transmute the shit into gold.
Also, your subconscious is harboring a delicious lobster dinner.
The primordial crustacean.
What do you think of...
Speaking of shit into gold, I'm drinking my beer out of this Holy Mountain / Twin Peaks glass.
Ooh! Have you seen Holy Mountain Sorter Tzadkiel?
Oh, hell yeah. Only like 1,000 times. I love Alejandro Jodorowsky, and I would say that that's my favorite movie of all time.
See, now you know why we let her hang out with us, Matt.
Oh, man. That movie is a genius. I love his use of tarot symbolism. Like, there's a scene where, like, the fishhook Zadi is coming down the side of the tower. Hey. And then, like, homeboy Jesus hops up and, like, gets lifted up, and then he's in, like, the Technicolor tunnel, Jachin and Boaz and the teacher.
Oh, man.
So great.
The crazy goat throne. I love the goat throne.
Yeah! Oh, it's great.
Yeah. That
love
alchemist
it.
Character, the alchemist in the goat throne room. Do you ever watch Adventure Time?
No, but I saw a picture from the new Adventure Time. That's totally...
Yeah.
Wait, no. I'm thinking of...
There's a Holy Mountain episode.
There's a Holy Mountain episode of Adventure Time, but there's also...
Oh.
There's a death character who shows up, and I don't know if he's necessarily a death character. I can't remember exactly what it is, but he wears that alchemist's outfit, but his head is the head of a horse skull. Strange fella. There's a lot of Adventure Time is it has a lot of weird esoteric symbolism wrapped up in it, and it's all hidden behind this like facade of a children's cartoon.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I was actually just thinking of Rick and Morty, who did something similar in like one of their recent episodes. I don't actually watch either of these shows, but sometimes they're like on in the periphery, and I saw a pic of it. I was like, what?
Yeah, if you ever want to like waste part of your day, just eat some marijuana edibles, and then watch Adventure Time until it makes you cry. It shouldn't take more than like 10 episodes.
Okay. Noted.
Okay, I want to ask you some more questions about the moon card, though.
Do it.
Okay. So what is up with the primordial crustacean? Like, what do you usually associate that crustacean with?
So, okay. There are a lot of various opinions about it. No, I know it's not a test.
Okay.
So I was actually just reading about this the other day. Crowley changed his to the dung beetle in his deck, the Thoth deck.
I guess that's not super surprising.
No, he says that like the card is attributed to Kefra, and like attributes kind of like I was mentioning, the transmutation of the shit into gold embodied in this card, because the dung beetles lay their eggs in feces and then roll it across, and the moon is like a reflection of the sun, so there's like lots of other symbol. That's like kind of Crowley's take on it. Actually, that was from Robert Wang's book on Kabbalistic Tarot.
Okay.
And so in cases, and in mine, I would say that it represents like an early, like a prototypical being, right? Mm-hmm. Crawling out of the waters of subconsciousness, right? Mm-hmm. Coming onto land. Here in the depiction of the moon card, you see the four kingdoms, right? You see the mineral depicted in the rocks and the crystals, the vegetable depicted by the grass, the animal depicted by the animals.
I'd like to interrupt you there for a second. You didn't just list the four minerals. You listed the three categories of things that you get from 20 questions.
But then you see symptoms of humankind through the buildings that are made.
Right.
But there is no human in the building. But then the moon card is spooky, okay, because there are these rolling hills, okay? And the yellow brick road, as I call it, which you see throughout the
dark. I was going to call it the yellow brick road, too. It's very striking. Like, it kind of looks like it's pretty much the only path. It's the only choice you really have.
And I mean, you can walk off, but
doesn't look fun.
Good luck.
Yeah.
No.
You're gonna want a headlamp.
So in the card, there are hills that you go up and down, up and down, up and down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're always higher than where you started, but then when you hit a new low, it still really sucks. But you're still in your lows that you hit, you're still better. Then you're better off than where you started.
Mm-hmm.
But the card, the moon, is really like integrating successes and failures for sure. It's bittersweet. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to, part of the work of reaching adepthood and cleansing is like honest self-reflection. Like, what did I do today, you know, that I could have done better at? Like, was I snarky to someone? You know, what would have been a more skillful way to look at that? Or like, you know, there are lots of, you're not going to get far if you're not reflecting on your actions in the work, you know?
Yeah.
I do a lot of Buddhist work too. And one of the core practices is Vajrasattva invocation, who is a deity of purification. And part of it is that you have to actually actively dig up your failures and like, all the times you were an asshole, and like look at that and pray to never do that again. But that is also that can be correlated to this card for sure.
Okay.
Purification, absolutely. And also that can be, that purification aspect is definitely linked with Samech as well. Temperance, for sure. Temperance is like being purified in the tests and trials of life experience, right?
Yeah.
Definitely a card of alchemical transformation. And, you know, balancing, like you see in Temperance, Archangel Michael, he is standing there, and on one side, which represents Scorpio, water sign.
Do you think that the angel in Temperance, is that really, is that supposed to be Archangel Michael?
It is Archangel Michael in Case's system. Case, so there's like different, so Robert Wang says in his book that Gabriel, or no, excuse me, Michael is in, he says Raphael is in Judgment, but Case is very clear that it's Gabriel in Judgment, and it makes sense because Gabriel has the trumpet. So there's like a lot of varying opinions, but I am from the school of Case. So that's definitely
so
the school that I am trained in.
The Temperance card really stood out to me because there's some really fascinating stuff in here. Probably the weirdest to me being that the Temperance card is holding the Devil's Torch.
They are definitely similar. I would say that the Devil's Torch is more smoldering.
I mean, slightly. But if you compare this Temperance card to like the classical Devil from the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, the Devil has a downward-facing torch, right? Just like your Temperance does. I found that to be really interesting. Is the torch part of Paul Foster Case's symbolism, or was that something that came to you?
Oh no, that was part of Case's symbolism.
Oh, interesting. Too. I'm not super familiar with Paul Foster Case's tarot, so that just really struck me as unusual.
Well, and it's absolutely unusual. I mean, and you're noting something that is significant for sure, because every card builds on the previous cards, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's very powerful teachings in the connection between the cards as you're progressing through the major keys. So there are a lot of important lessons in the reflections between Key 14, Temperance, and Key 15, the Devil.
Oh, you do
have... And then there's...
Your Devil is the downward-facing torch also.
Yeah, for sure. And then also, the Temperance is Sagittarius, and the Devil is Capricorn. They're right next to each other. They sandwich the winter solstice. There's some, and I was actually born on their cusp. So I'm like a Cap. I'm a Capisag,
as I say. A Sagricorn.
Yeah. Well, technically, I was born at 00 degrees Capricorn, just a few hours after the sun moved in. So I'm on the Capricorn side.
This really makes me wish that I had your deck in order so that as these things came up, it was easier for me to find these cards. Your Devil card is one of the things that's interesting about it is how stark it is. Like, there's a lot of negative space in your Devil card. You've got... The rest of your cards have a lot more kind of, like, fullness. Like, if you hold Temperance and the Devil side by side, you can see how in the Temperance card, the main character in the card, the Archangel, is, like... You're really up close. Like, those wings are clipping the edge there, and he's like, you know, he fills up the whole scene. Whereas the Devil card, he's kind of tiny and wimpy. He's kind of pushed into the background a little bit, and there's a lot of blank, empty space left around him. Which is really fascinating.
Yeah, he's a, you know, or they, I guess, are kind of a grotesque figure. I mean, there's something that would never occur in nature, right? They're like part eagle, part goat, part bat,
Part Vulcan.
So I was told by a Gnostic priest that mudra represents the letter sheen.
That this does? The Vulcan hand sign?
Yep, the Vulcan hand sign. Yeah, for, at least in this specific, in the esoteric tarot. And then, so if you notice the difference between, if you compare and contrast the Devil and the Hierophant, So the Hierophant has two fingers up with his palm facing towards him, which suggests something is concealed, mm-hmm. right? There's like something concealed, whereas the devil's like, nope, this is all there is. And that's the teaching of the devil, right? He's mm-hmm. like, no, there's nothing beyond materiality, right? It's the suffering of samsara. Like the devil tempts us to think that that's all there is, okay. you know? But Case says that the devil is the only card that is not the way that it appears. And that's why it has
what do you think that means?
I think that it means that that's a veil of illusion.
Okay.
So there's like, if you would lift unlifted, it would probably look very similar to the Lovers, right? Because there are two, it would actually, I think that the Lovers is really the positive expression of the devil. Like if you lifted the veil of the devil, it would look like the Lovers. And if you actually examine the cube of space,
mm-hmm.
so the Lovers is east above. On the cube of space, it's the edge of east above.
And is that?
And then
Vav, hey.
So the Lovers is Zayn.
Okay. Okay.
The Sword of Discrimination, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then opposite, so you have east above is the Lovers, and then west below is the Devil. So they're actually like opposing each other. So we have east mm-hmm. above and west below. So it's like east above is the Lovers, like. This very profound card of like brilliance and brightness and of harmony.
Right, right.
And then the devil is in west below, like the place of a place of very intense darkness. Right. But yeah. if you lifted the veil, I think it would look like the devil the Lovers, the devil, these beings are in ignorance. They're kind of just like the two humans are just like spaced out. They're in chains. The chains are big enough to lift over their heads. Right, they're mm-hmm. in bondage because of their ignorant choice to right, be in bondage. Right. Whereas the Lovers shows the three modes of communication in the proper modes of communication. So we have super consciousness, Archangel Raphael above Archangel of Healing,
mm-hmm.
representing like transcendent awareness. And then we have self-consciousness and subconsciousness below. So self-consciousness is the male. And subconsciousness is the female.
Okay.
So Case places powerful emphasis on these three modes of consciousness. Like basically the entirety of the tarot is the interplay between these three modes of consciousness. And his number one core teaching, which is the most profound I have taken away from the Western tradition at all, is that subconsciousness is amenable to control by suggestion. So subconsciousness is the prima materia, right? It comprises everything. But it's like a garden.
Uh-huh.
And we plant seeds just level, our waking consciousness, that grow in the garden of subconsciousness, right?
Okay.
So if I like say things like, I'm an idiot, I'm an idiot, I'm an idiot, what seeds am I planting, right? Or like if I'm constantly focusing on negative aspects, like that will kind of carve the grooves deeper for those to manifest, right? So right, it's all right. about where we put our attention, because energy flows where attention goes, so to speak.
It's akin to not only like the self-fulfilling prophecy stuff that like Robert Anton Wilson warns us about, but also the law of attraction from New Thought from like the Kabbalion and William Walker Atkinson. That's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. So, but the Lovers actually shows the three modes of communication in harmony. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you're intelligently using self-consciousness, the man in the Lovers,
mm-hmm.
to plant proper seeds in subconsciousness, the woman, aka the garden, mm-hmm. or the waters of subconsciousness, subconsciousness will look to superconsciousness to manifest everything. Because we want our lives to unfold in harmony with divine will, so to speak, or in harmony with the greater good.
You want your lobster to take the yellow brick road.
Exactly. You want the lobster to take the yellow brick road. Exactly. So that is why.
I think I just got enlightened. I think I probably should have some more beer.
Yeah. So the Lovers is very important. And like part of the teaching of the lovers is discrimination, mm-hmm. right? And like discernment, like use that sword, right? Like if there are negative influences in your life, chop that shit out, okay? If there, you know, you need to use that sword to navigate life, because people that don't know how to use the wrath, you know, just kind of take everything in, and like there's so much crap that we need to weed out in the world. Just like the sword is also a powerful part of justice, right? You see justice with the scales and with the sword.
Yeah.
And what doesn't come into harmony
that naturally. Right on top. Thank you for picking justice. Yeah! That's perfect. I didn't have to dig around with this one.
Yeah, so like what doesn't come into harmony, you know, as it is, like she will chop away. You know, she is active with the Mars force. She's in a red dress. With green as well.
Wait. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about justice. This is an interesting card because I want to talk a little bit about some periphery stuff. Purple curtains? Is that just to provide contrast with the yellow background? Or are purple and yellow important here?
Absolutely. Okay. Anytime you see any color, it's pregnant with meaning. Okay.
All right.
So there's a strong connection. Like I was saying earlier, each card builds on the previous card and of all of the preceding cards. So the card right before key 11 is key 10, which is violet in color. Key 10 is the Wheel of Fortune, and it is karma.
It's one of my cycles of karma. That key 9 is Jeopardy, right? Because Jeopardy always comes right before Wheel of Fortune.
But yeah, so the curtains are veiling, right? They're lifted. The veil is lifted.
Oh,
right?
So you got this justice. I see. I see now. Like the colors are far more the colors are important even in just relation between the cards, as you pretty much told us right at the beginning when you were like, if you lay them out all in a circle, it's a color wheel, and like the colors relate the cards to each other. Now. How do the colors of these cards relate to the minor arcana then? Like, let's just pull out this dude right here. Good old king of... Good old stabby swords. King of swords.
Well, so yellow is a symbol of air.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any good cabalist can just start flowing, you know, jamming with their Thothian mind. You know,
you've got Zeus all on of various here.
Symbols. It's true. Well, it's a manifestation of Zeus for sure, but reminiscent of Zeus for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the minor keys. I mean, they're minor keys. You know, I really use the minor keys for divination. I'd say the most powerful work with the tarot is with meditation, manifestation through meditation with the major arcana for internal alchemy. But I can draw correlations if you want. But please continue.
No. we'll avoid the correlations for now. all right, back to the justice card. Now, the justice card is flanked by two pillars. And on the top of each of the two pillars is a red vessel.
Pomegranates.
Oh, that I was thinking that makes sense. Okay. My Alchemical Bromance is sponsored by Miskatonic Books. Miskatonic Books is an online bookstore that focuses on rare, limited edition, and custom-made books of the highest quality. They specialize in books on the occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Hermeticism, and other topics of interest to you, our listeners. Check them out on the web at miskatonicbooks.com.
So pomegranates are very special.
Yes.
In old school cabalistic symbolism, pomegranates are said to contain 613 seeds, which are the number of commandments.
Mm-hmm. Midrash.
Not just 10.
Yes.
613.
I know. Wait. We've been around the block. what's...
Yeah, for sure. Hey, me too. Just once.
Yeah, just once. It's too smoky to go a second time. Okay. All right, cool. That makes
You also see... Yeah, you'll also see a pomegranate on the veil behind the high priestess. Anytime you see a woman, it's going to relate to subconsciousness. So again, that pomegranate links the high priestess with justice, for sure.
Okay, hold on. I'm looking for the high priestess. I'm sure. I know she's in here somewhere, hiding deep within my subconscious.
I straight up made it an actual yellow brick road for the high priestess.
Tell me what color the high priestess is. That'll make this easier.
Blue.
That's not it. Man, there's a lot
She's
of
the
cards.
Source of all water. She is subconsciousness. She is the moon. The high priestess is attributed to the moon in the major arcana. And she is so special, okay? She is the only path that carries supernal light into Tifereth, directly.
Your high priestess also has a palm tree.
Yes.
Which makes me think of... Toma Deborah, or the palm tree of Deborah, one of Moses Cordovero's key works.
I have not read that, though. I do know who Moshe Cordovero is. He's kind of famous, you know?
Yeah, a little famous. we haven't had him on the show yet, but that's because Matt hasn't finished working on our time machine microphone. We can only get video.
But yeah, the palm tree and the pomegranate, they represent masculine and feminine energy. And the palm tree is mostly green and the pomegranate is mostly red. And here you see the most powerful tantric union in the tarot and in astrology is that of the syzygy between Venus and Mars. And
pulled out like if a 50 cent word there.
Oh. Hell yeah.
I like that.
Syzygy. It's a special word. I think most of the time it's used to denote a relationship between the sun and the moon, but I kind of just use it for other celestial bodies too.
The first person we interviewed was Chuck Dunning, who's a Masonic author. And I can't remember if he wanted to use the word syzygy and he used something else instead, or if he used the word syzygy instead of another word that started with an S. And he used it like 5 or 6 times. And then like half an hour later, he's like, oh crap, you guys, I screwed up. I used the wrong word. And we're like, it's okay. We do it all the time. It's our thing. Your deck is super impressive. I want you to know. It's so impressive. I was so impressed by it that I carry it around as my daily deck. Like I have it in my bag. I sewed it its own little tarot pouch. See? I think you've seen this already.
Oh!
Yeah. and hopefully all 20 of our listeners will buy one.
Oh, that would be great. Okay, I'm going to use this moment to segue into a special announcement that has been cultivating for about 3 years? 3 years? Yeah.
You've been waiting 3 years to be on our podcast for this announcement?
Yes, it's true. Well,
this is so exciting.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so when I was doing tarot fundamentals, which is, I've heard from many like BOTA adepts that it's kind of his magnum opus when it comes to his courses.
This is Paul Foster
Even though it's
Cases.
Kind of funny because Paul Foster Case. Yeah. Okay. It's kind of funny because he does have a course called The Great Work.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone says that Tarot Fundamentals is like, it's really important. And I highly recommend that everyone do it that is interested in sounding the deeper meanings in tarot. But I took extensive notes from my practices every day and received a lot of beautiful poetic channelings about each of the major keys. And I've been kind of, honing them, and I've put them all, I've refined them all into these beautiful Kabbalistic invocations.
Uh-huh.
And I have now put together, I'm calling it Rota Tarot Internal Alchemy.
Yeah.
And it's a 22-day working with the Kabbalistic Tarot.
Uh-huh.
And you basically do tarot meditations and do a little invocation. And I've put a lot of love and thoughts and meaning into the invocations. There's a lot of hidden gematria. I use a lot of like very specific words, like English translations of Hebrew words that carry the numerological signatures relevant. And so every single word is placed with intention. And so I really do believe that they carry the essence of the Hebrew letters and the tarot mandalas that express them.
That's cool. And are you releasing this as a book, as an online course, as a series of psychic emanations? Like, what are you?
So I have a printer that I use out of Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Because I'm poor and I can't pay people in the United States to print my shit. I mean, I'm not poor, but I'm, you know,
yeah,
I do what I can. So I found a deck size that's about 5 inches by 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm printing, it'll come with the 22 tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then 22 meditation cards of the same color. So basically, for example, let's take the High Priestess, because you're talking about her.
Uh-huh.
You'll see for the High Priestess, there will be a 5x8 humongous tarot card with her on it.
Uh-huh.
And then there will be a corresponding meditation card that has her correspondences. The whole card will be blue.
Uh-huh.
With the text on it.
Okay.
With correspondences and a humongous gimel.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like an affirmation on the front.
You mean the letter and not a actual camel, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. No, it comes with a camel, so nice. Make sure your landlord's okay with that.
Okay.
And then, so the front side of the meditation card has the correspondences, like the esoteric titles from the Golden Dawn tradition, the title from the 32 Paths of Wisdom, just other correspondences, and also an affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
That I recommend is spoken in the key, so you would
sing it,
like each
or chant it.
Yeah, well, or chant it. You would chant it. So, for example, is attributed to G sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're doing sound and color work to align yourself with the energetic signature of Gimel or the High Priestess, right? So it's blue. You see blue everywhere. You see the blue border of the High Priestess, the blue card with all the correspondences.
Uh-huh.
Say the affirmation. The affirmation is just a couple of sentences. Then afterward, you kind of just, you soak in the meaning of the affirmation and, you know, poke and prod with meditating on the symbols. And then there's an invocation on the back. It's pretty long.
That sounds
not super
cool.
Long. It's so cool. I've really been pouring so much love. The love that I have for the tarot is like the cosmic mother's love for all beings, you know? And so
that's heavy.
But I really think people that are into, you know, dual pragmatic occultists
mm-hmm.
will dig it. I do think it's pretty clear. And if you just follow, if you do it as instructed, I think that it's totally safe. You know, some crazy black magicians put out all sorts of shit these days. You know? I don't know. I follow, you know, rare occult books on Facebook, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not doing that thing bound in serpent skin with all the fucking upside down pentagrams.
I've got a bunch of those books. They're not that bad.
Okay, well, I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. I'll stay with my Sephirotic archangelic stuff over here, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you do what works for you and stuff. But
no, it's true. It's true. I'm not hating at all. I totally honor free will for all beings and for them to do what is best. I just find that these energies are very pure and mm-hmm. very healing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I gravitate to for sure.
Well, that sounds like a really awesome project. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it. How soon do you think it'll
be out? I'm about to start.
Yeah.
I am about to do a, or actually I was going to see if you guys would be willing to proofread. And I was going to send you, both of you, one complimentary copy each.
Heck yeah.
Awesome, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. And if you find any typos, let me know. I've stared at it for so many hours.
Yeah, I think we'd be good at that.
Especially if we backtimed it to complete it, the work before our My Chemical Bromance convention.
Oh yeah,
at the end of October.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. MAB.
Yeah. What? Then we could.
Yeah. It's a 3-person convention. It's gonna be a big party. You know, we're going to Matt's house. We're going to brew a beer.
Sweet.
A magic beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we ready to reveal any secrets about our magic beer, Matt? I mean.
No, not yet.
Okay. Not even the cool name.
Yeah. That would be cool. I mean, but this would be cool to really to go through it before then and talk about it.
Yeah,
then.
And actually we could even work on some of it. We could even do some of the work.
Yeah.
We've sometimes when the three of us Joey isn't here, but sometimes when the three of us have gotten together, we have done some interesting ritual work. The first time that I ever did, well, I mean, not the first time I ever did ritual with these guys, because, you know, we're all Freemasons, but the first time I ever did, like, magical ritual with them, we hotboxed ourselves with frankincense. It turns out that they're used to it, but, like, we were in a room that, it wasn't a tiny room, it was like a bedroom in a house that Matt had just moved into, and we sort of put together, like, I think it was like a lesser banding string ritual of the pentagram, where we each took a part, wasn't it, Matt? Did we do something like that? And they just kept putting more and more frankincense resin on the charcoal thingy. I mean, the room looked like Portland outside right now. It was so thick. And I was, you know, about halfway through the ritual, I'm like, you guys know that frankincense is psychoactive, right? And Matt's like, no wonder this ritual always works so well. So we'll probably do that again.
Oh yeah, without question.
Cool. I love frankincense. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Mm. It's psychoactive.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a pee test for it or anything, so you're good. Ritual magicians everywhere can rest in peace with their frankincense burning.
Well, then, if you decide to actually, because, like, I do think, back to the invocations, I think that, like, you can just read them, and they're really amazing. But if you do, like, I've set up, like, a little practice flow of, like, a little bit of breath work, meditation with the card, the chanting of the affirmation, and then reading the invocation, and then sitting again after having read the invocation and connecting with the card. And then you, like, jot any ideas you have in your journal or whatever. If you want to be the guinea pig for that, like, please let me know how it goes.
Oh yeah, we'll totally do it. And Joey will be a guinea pig for anything. So. You know, Joey will totally do anything.
Whoa.
If you ask him.
I have these crazy drugs in my freezer, man. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but I'm really glad he's not here tonight. He lives in Camas. He's not too far from you. He'd be like on his way over. Well, I feel like I've asked you a ton of questions, and maybe it's Matt's turn to ask you some questions, or maybe it's your turn to ask us questions if you'd like to ask us anything.
Yeah, I think you should.
Okay, well, I'll let.
Oh, no, I was gonna say you should ask
you questions.
Yeah, yeah, ask us questions.
Okay. What are your connections with the tarot? Like, I know I've spoken with you, Eric, about your long history with the tarot, but what about yours, Matt?
Mine somewhat similar to yours. I joined the BOTA, and I'm still early on in the coursework, but I'm as far as the Tower card, but that's...
In Tarot Fundamentals?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet! Yeah. Oh, I love the Tower!
Yeah. I've actually held off the Tower for a month because Joey also did BOTA, and whenever he hit the Tower card, his life fell apart. Hardcore. So, like, I'm at the Tower. I'll wait a week.
Your shit only explodes if you're on a faulty foundation, though. Yeah. Like, it's the life power, you know? That zap is from super consciousness.
And it's not just working with the Tower. Working on any sort of esoteric path, your shit will explode if it's not on a solid foundation. I mean, the story of my life since I started practicing ritual magic is filled with my life exploding over and over and over again. I mean, I've had... I feel like I probably have my most solid foundation now, the shakiest thing is changing the litter in my cat's litter box. So so I try to do that regularly, and everything else feels like it's going okay. But man, being a magician is tough.
Dude, tell me about it.
It's like the universe keeps trying to kill you. And then eventually it's like, you know what? We're just going to set your part of the world on fire. We'll just burn it. See if you come out okay. Try that on for size.
So true.
See, the universe was like, there's too many Oklahoma magicians living in the Pacific Northwest now. We got to burn this down.
Yeah. That's thanks, my alchemical bromance. But I mean, Matt, as an external observer, your life seems like it's on a pretty solid path. I think you should just dive into the tower. So I don't know if the BOTA really teaches this, but this is something that I've always had a really strong feeling about. Like, the tower and the hanged man are super closely intertwined. Like, they're kind of, there's a lot of similarities when you have to deal with both of those cards. The hanged man, though, is something that you do on purpose, and the tower is something that happens to you no matter what. So it could be that now that you've got your momentum up, the tower will happen to you whether you like it or not. So I say put on your hoplite armor and charge into battle and face it head on. You know, think of Lord Fanny from The Invisibles, who was like, I am a sorcerer and I do not fear. Death is my ally.
You're right, I need to. I just need to push forward. That's it.
You'll love it. Oh my god, I'll never forget when I was meditating on the tower in Terra Fundamentals. I was like, this is my favorite card. I love it. I was born on a planetary convergence in Capricorn, and Mars is exalted in Capricorn, and I just fucking love Mars. And I know it gets a bad rap, but nothing would get done without Mars. Mm-hmm. You know? And sometimes, like, the fault, dude, our world is filled with faulty foundations, man. I'm ready for that shit to explode. I just don't want to die, and I don't want the ecosystem to die, you know? So, but anything that is,
it's
like,
it's already too late for the ecosystem.
Oh, no, it's not.
Look outside, Evie. Evie, just smell the air.
Well, I hope that it bounces back, you know? I mean, I think that it will, and you know, human beings, god, we have so much potential, man. We could make this world thrive. We could, like, enhance the ecosystems, but instead we're like, no, fuck this, fuck it, fuck it all, let's just kill ourselves and everything else.
I mean, there's a big problem with that. Like, if we make the world thrive, then that means that the rich people don't get to keep all the money and the poor people don't get to stay poor, and you know that that's not how the world works, right? Like,
not how this world works.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful. I'm trying to be, at least. God. It's hard some days.
Yeah, it is. Your tower card is, it's got a solar eclipse on it.
It does look that way. Yep. Definitely does look that way. The tower is, so if you notice, like I said, that the tarot is holographic. You'll notice that the sun, where the lightning bolt is coming from, which is obviously the lightning bolt that goes down the tree of life, creating all that exists. It comes from the upper right-hand corner of the card, which is where you'll see the sun card in the Fool, and where you'll see the eagle representing Scorpio, AKA the sexual force, the generative force, which you see in the Wheel of Fortune and the World. So there's definitely some potent meaning there too, for sure. It's like that evolutionary force, right? That's so intimately tied with the generative region and, like, you know, the sexual energy, kundalini, you know, the evolutionary life power, so to speak. So that evolutionary life power is what knocks the false crown of illusion off the tower. And that tower is, like, all alone, like, isolated, you know?
And it's the unleaning tower of Pisa, too. I mean,
yeah, it is. True.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, I totally interrupted your questions for Matt. you asked him about the BOTA, and he was like, yeah, I'm working on the tower. And then we're like, Matt, the tower's coming to get you. You can't run away from it.
I don't know where we were going from there, but...
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Just a little bit of each of those.
I'd be scared for the moon card, dude. Tower is a piece of cake. Just, you know, stay inside when you're on the moon card.
Have you ever had a chance to go to, a vibratory attunement with a BOTA group?
Actually, I've done quite a few of those. So I've done the BOTA courses, but I was actually working with a different group that does a lot of the same work, same lineage, but not working with the official, working with BOTA coursework, but in a different
Buffalo
group. Ian.
Okay.
But the gentleman was empowered by, he had gone through the FLO system as well as BOTA and received permission to continue that work. So I was working with a super small group in Canada and I got to be an officer and all that jazz, super early on.
Nice.
So I was doing vibratory attunements all the time. I was helping to host tarot circles for over three years in Canada. So we just continuously rolled through the tarot cards and had public study groups every Thursday once a week. We would basically open with reading a book of tokens meditation, would sit in silence for about 5 minutes and contemplate the symbolism in the card, and then just have an open discussion for an hour. It was amazing. And then we'd close with some sound and color work. We would chant EIO 3 times with the note and just visualize the note of the key, and then visualize the color of the key just flooding our body and the room and the world and the galaxy and so on and so forth. And I love this work. I think that Case's work is the most profound I've encountered. I've dabbled, not a ton in the Western mysteries, but I've done some Thelemic stuff and some Golden Dawn stuff and Masonic stuff and Gnostic stuff and, a little bit of this.
That sounds like dabbling a ton.
Well, there's more stuff, dude. Some of these crazy books, Cult of Sabotage getting pretty popular with all the Andrew Chumbly stuff. And I mean, it looks beautiful. And dude, I have a lot of respect for that. Okay, I was just saying, when I read Case's stuff, I feel like I'm taking a psychic bath. Ah. But when I read Crowley's stuff, I feel like I need to take a bath.
Yeah, I totally understand that. All right, that's cool.
I love Crowley. Totally. He's a genius, dude. I'm just dissing a little, because who whips their student with stinging nettles, dude? I'm sorry, but I'm not down with that.
I don't know. My dad made me crouch with stinging nettles once. I mean, he didn't make me. He just didn't warn me. I learned a really important lesson. It was a little painful. I had pants on, or shorts at least.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't want to contribute to the shit slinging, man. I don't want to be like that. I see all this Golden Dawn. Everyone just hates each other, dude. It's come on. Can't you just contribute to peace or whatever? I mean, it's okay to give, I don't know. I give Crowley shit because he's Crowley, but I'm not going to if someone really love that path, I honor that, and I want them, I want them to do what they feel called to do. I know it's got its place in things, for sure. But I see so much of the poo flinging, and
there's a lot of the poop flinging, but it's mostly, the people who make the most noise are the ones flinging the most poop. But I mean, we've had OTO guys, or at least one OTO guy on the podcast, and he's super smart and awesome to talk to, and eager to come back for more. I don't know if we've had any Golden Dawn people on the podcast. That there is a Golden Dawn group in Portland, but they tend to be pretty quiet about who they are. But it's just the poop slinging is just really loud. It's easy to see.
Yeah.
It certainly doesn't represent it all. It's like, you know, freaky fundamentalist evangelical Christians don't represent all of Christianity, or
for sure,
yeah, or militant atheists don't represent all atheists, or something
true.
Like that.
True. Yeah. I mean? Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
It's just some people are just really good at being noisy, noisy in a bad way. I think. I don't know. So it's okay if you don't like Crowley. You can totally say you don't like Crowley, and it doesn't count as slinging shit. I'm not a super big fan of Crowley, but I can still have a good conversation with somebody who is a fan of Crowley and hopefully learn some things, or at least learn a couple things. So, you know, you're good. Nobody thinks you're slinging shit.
Cool.
All right, Matt, you must have more questions.
I don't, because I'm at a disadvantage because I don't have the deck, oh. So I wasn't able to prepare.
You're just going to have to ask her a question that isn't about tarot at all. Esoteric Buddhism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Tell us a little bit about esoteric Buddhism. Just a
smidge. Wow. Yeah. A smidge, okay.
Yeah, open the gates.
Well, okay, I'll open the gates. Here, dude, and I'll open the gates in a really kick-ass way that relates to the Tree of Life, all right? Okay, and well, the tarot.
So we've already been recording for a long time, so you can open the gates in a way that it's like a cliffhanger, where people are like,
okay,
holy crap, we want to hear about what she has to say. Invite her back, and then we'll be forced to invite you back.
Okay. Okay, so dig this.
Okay.
In Vajrayana, uh-huh. Tibetan Buddhism, which is my primary practice with regard to like regular, I mean, I work with the tarot like constantly. I can't stop that, but I am a consistent Vajrayana practitioner. There are the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. Okay. So first one is precious human life,
mm-hmm.
reflecting on what an amazing opportunity it is to be a human being, how rare it is considering the countless forms of species just on this planet,
mm-hmm.
you know, in like, there's a teaching about precious human life. The chances of being incarnated as a human is as slim as a turtle that only comes up for air once every 100 years. And there just so happens to be a plank floating at the top of the ocean with a little hole in it. And when the turtle comes up to the ocean, to the top of the water to get air, his head goes into that little circle in the plank. So that is their teaching of how rare it is to be incarnate.
Who thought that up?
I mean, some dude in a cave in Tibet like 2,000 years ago.
Afterwards, he's like, I think frankincense is psychoactive.
That or he was just a dick to turtles.
Yeah. I mean, that's an awesome metaphor for how rare something could be, but it's also like,
yeah, very specific.
Right, cool.
Okay. So we have precious human life.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have karma.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All of our actions have opposing reactions, right? So we better not be assholes, because that's just going to create more suffering in the world. Then we have impermanence, which is the most important one to contemplate, because everything is fleeting, right? I could die tonight. You could die tonight. You know,
Matt could.
This world
because of the
could
tower.
Get hit.
Yeah.
I mean, everything stuff, dude, we can't take this stuff when we die, you know, all this stuff is impermanent, like, you know, a million years, you know, what is going to be left of this, you know, what is going to be left when we die? I mean, impermanence is really important to contemplate, right? And in Vajrayana, they say that if there's one thought you can contemplate that will actually take you to enlightenment, it is impermanence.
Mm-hmm.
So really, and you know, when you think about that, when you're having conversations every day with people, especially if you get in a fight, for example, I mean, if you're holding impermanence in the forefront of your mind, you're probably going to react differently, right? You might want to be more skillful in case it's the last time you see this person. Mm-hmm. So impermanence is a very important thing to contemplate. And then finally, okay, so we have precious human life, karma, impermanence, also known as samsara, suffering, right? All of the suffering in the world. Oh my God, how many people are sick? How many people are homeless in Portland right now, breathing this shitty air, like they can't go inside, you know? Mm-hmm. What about all the animals, all the birds' nests, you know, all of everything, you know, contemplating that, holding that, there is so much suffering right now. It sucks. There's like no way around it, you know? And so that also, all of these things, like I said, these four topics are said to be the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma, because you turn the mind to Dharma because Dharma is the antidote. It's the medicine that helps purify you so that you can be a better conduit of healing in the world, right? Uh-huh. So here is how it relates to the Tree of Life and will be the cliffhanger.
Okay.
So we have...
Wait, can I guess?
Precious human life.
I mean, the first thing I wanted to think of was the four worlds or the four levels of the soul. But all right, you go. You tell us. Okay.
So check this. On the Tree of Life, there are the four diagonal paths that enter into Tifereth. Okay. So we have the Hermit. Which is linked to precious human life, right? He has gone this way to be at this apex to hold the light for others, right? Because he realizes the nature of precious human life.
Okay.
Right. That's why he is lighting the way for others, because he wants to help, right? And so then we have karma, justice, right?
Balance.
Yeah, for sure. And then death, impermanence. And then suffering, illusion, samsara, the devil, right? So those four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. Also, archetypically, they link with the four diagonal paths entering Tifereth or Christ consciousness, right? The heart center.
Right.
So that is my correlation between those ideas. There's a lot to unfold there, for sure.
There is a lot to unfold. And we won't do it right now. We're going to leave that as an exercise for the listener. Okay, what's your website, Evie? I mean,
my website. Hi, my name is Evie. My website is rotatarot.com. That's rotatarot.com. And my store is on there. I got some artwork on there.
And this episode will be out in 3 weeks. Yep. So will you have your tarot meditation series on there?
I will indeed. I'm about to start blasting the info for that probably tomorrow.
Awesome.
So, yep.
Okay. Awesome. Are you on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter, but I'm on Instagram. I don't do Twitter yet. I don't know. I'm still feeling it out.
And your Instagram handle is?
I am on Twitter. It is Soror, that's S-O-R-O-R, underscore, Zadkiel, that's T-Z-A-D-K-I-E-L.
Okay.
Soror Zadkiel.
I'll totally put that in the show notes, because that's...
Sweet. Yeah, that's a mouthful.
Nobody's going to watch
it. Be real.
Okay. All right, cool. And we are My Alchemical Bromance, and you can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. And you can look us up on iTunes or Stitcher or other podcasting thingamajigs. And you should leave us a good review. And then you should also go buy Sora Zadkiel's awesome tarot deck and her meditation series thing. Which is going to have a name? What's the name going to be?
Rota Tarot Internal Alchemy.
Right, you already said that. I totally just forgot. Rota Tarot Internal Alchemy. So, thanks for listening, and what does Joey always say?
They say Hail Eris.
Hail Eris!
Oh, shit! Alright then! Thank you.
Thank you.